For me, a lot of times, I'm going to give an example, like at TWC, the women, I genuinely enjoy their company. They're great women. They're funny. They're great people. And one of the big things that like they will do is they'll come in and say your name and be happy to see you, and you're happy to see them. And, you know, I didn't realize that this was kind of a thing that was helping someone in a situation. But, you know, when we get, for instance, we were looking over kind of some of the responses for the women who've been through our shelter. And a lot of it was the staff are friendly. The staff are welcoming. And really, I never realized how much of a big difference that makes, is just being friendly and welcoming. And that's one of the things that you can do to build confidence, because a lot of times, you know, people are expecting to be met with, well, why were you there? Well, why was this? Why was that? Why were you with them? And things like that. Kind of that idea of who they are based on the experience they've had. But like I said, these women are wonderful, funny women with really great personalities a lot of times. And just being able to be genuinely enjoying their company kind of helps them a lot. And really, it's also about being able to listen whenever they're willing to open up to you. Because I don't spend a lot of my time sitting in the back. Like, I have other things to do at my job. But what I am always willing to do is, if someone's having a hard day, just stop for a second and be like, well, I have 5 minutes. If you want to just talk about it, you can. I'm here to listen. And that really opens up a lot. And that brings a lot of confidence in yourself, because you're not willing to fix it. I mean, I'm willing to help if they want to fix their situation, but you're not pushing to fix their situation right then, and you're not promising to fix their situation. But what you can do is guarantee that you can listen.
Yes, and hopefully listening to them, you could also, you know, have them build their confidence and be able to do things that they've never really tried before or have done for them. So I think, you know, the women that are at the shelter, you know, we try to boost that, more like empower. And that's a great thing to have as women. And I think it's, you know, it makes you stand taller and makes you talk louder.
I think always coming in with a smile is a great way to come in and start the day. And like you were saying, Samantha, that, you know, you may be having a rough day, but at the end of the day, you know, we get to go home, but they have to stay there. And I think, you know, even just sharing, like you said, just listening and sharing a laugh is more than enough to be able to have them enjoy their day more. And even just simply on the topic of empowering, I think just, you know, treating them like a regular person, not like how you said, not by their past experience, you know,
it doesn't define who they are.
Exactly. And I think that is especially important because, you know, one, they're there to rebuild their lives. And, you know, I think just by treating them like their regular company is, you know, that would make me feel, you know, just, wow, like these guys are my friends, you know. They're not just people who are here to just help me get off my feet.
Another thing that I wanted to maybe put in there is that, you know, that the women and children that come to the shelter, we don't tell them what to do. They decide what they want to do. We may, you know, help them, suggest, and kind of lead them, but we're not, our job is not to put them where we want or where they think they need to be. They eventually are their own person and they decide what they want. So, you know, if, you know, someone is upset about the way things have happened with a certain person, well, we've tried. We at least try to help. But it's up to the women or, you know, whoever we're trying to help.
Yeah, and that kind of reminds me of a quote that we have on kind of before all our trainings, and I'm probably not going to get this exactly right, but it goes a little something like this, like, don't walk in front of me, I may not follow. Don't walk behind me, I may not lead. Just stand behind me and be my friend. And that's a lot of times kind of all that people want. And of course, yeah, in a way, and not really lead, just guide them in a way. Sometimes if they are going through a really tough situation and they feel like they can't think, well, we'll be like, well, what do you want? If they have children, so what do you want for your children? We'll start there. And not really just like, oh, well, we're going to take you through this program, we're going to take you through this program, and you have to get this paperwork and that paperwork and that paperwork, because that could be very overwhelming, trying to really lead someone through a process like that. But maybe having leading questions. So saying, well, what do you want? Well, I just want to be safe. Well, this is kind of what we have if, you know, you want to look through this or if you want me to explain this to you. What do you want? Well, I want a job and I want a house. I want to be able to be self-sufficient. Well, then we could say, well, we have these applications. And if you want to go here, we could take you to this place to drop off your paperwork or anything like that. It's really just about kind of going where they want to go and being support along the way. So we're not leaving it all up to them because, you know, in these situations, it's hard. It's hard to think. It's hard to really try to have your mind focused on the future and only on the future when really right now things are maybe feel like they're falling apart. And so we're not going to stand in front of them because we don't know if they'll follow. We don't know if this is going to be the right thing for them or how they feel about it if you're leading all the time. We're not going to kind of sit back and wait till they move because, you know, it's hard to think, but it's really just about being support and then just kind of letting them achieve small things of what they want. They turned in an application. Well, I'm proud of you. Good. I'm really glad you're doing this. You're really moving in the right direction for what you want. And just saying little things like that and being a friend, that's really important.
Yeah, and all of these skills that we're talking about, like what we can do on an everyday basis to build confidence in working with survivors of domestic violence, I feel like all of this can be also used not only on a professional basis, but also on a personal basis. If you know that someone is a survivor of domestic violence or if they're currently going through domestic violence, be a friend, be a support. Just hold their hand, you know, along the way of this journey that's going to be so hard for them. And just be supportive, be a good friend.
All right. So this is a question we kind of get a lot, and I'm going to kind of have an introduction to this one. We have a lot of people, maybe parents or siblings or something, who will have see unhealthy behaviors, and right away they want to be like, well, let's call the police. You know, my sister's not being treated right, or my daughter or my son or my, you know, they're not being treated right. Let's call the police. And a lot of times they may be unhealthy behaviors, but they're not necessarily abusive behaviors. So what is the difference between an unhealthy and an abusive relationship? All right. Well, I'll start, I guess. So this is one thing that I like to kind of ask people is, does it feel like this person's being controlled a lot? Is this person making a lot of choices for them? For instance, who are they hanging out with? Who they're able to see, maybe take their phone or something, maybe isolate them. It's really the dynamic in the relationship. So, you know, couples, I've seen couples fight. It could be throwing fists. It could be throwing just harmful words at each other. But I've seen couples fight. Is that necessarily an abusive relationship where one person is being kind of depressed and really not having their opinion or their or able to make their own choices? I think that's a big way to see is just the dynamic in the relationship. Is it abusive or is it unhealthy?
Yeah, and I think it's important to realize that abuse is a lot more than hitting or punching. Abuse is and can be mental, emotional. It certainly can be physical or, you know, having like financial control over someone. So it could look a lot of different ways. So it can be kind of hard to distinguish between unhealthy and abusive, but I feel like it does come down to power and control. How much power and control does one partner have over the other?
So we talk a lot about, this is kind of backtracking, but also really on topic. We talk a lot about kind of letting people make their own decisions. And sometimes people will jump right to, well, you know, they need protection now, they need this, they now. And sometimes they do. And the times where people should really jump in and really kind of make the decision for them is if you feel like they might be in danger. So we have a lot of times maybe this person is manipulative, but the person who's experiencing domestic violence really wants to stay in the relationship. It should be really, before you get involved and you really take that kind of decision from them, are they going to be in danger in this relationship? So if there's anything, so for adults, we have that maybe, so there are certain things that we have to report on with adults. And we have to report for children as mandated reporters. So children meaning anybody under the age of 18. But in an abusive relationship, when that is really taken away is maybe serious injury or, you know, for teens, it could be like indicators of possible like physical harm or anything like that. Because, again, power and control is like a big we're going to talk about this a little bit, but power and control is a big indicator of a really, really an abusive relationship. And first off, again, we want people to take power for themselves, but we also want everybody to be safe. And I think that that's kind of not on this question, but I think that's something that with that leading to the question I should explain right now, is that you can report if someone's in danger. But if it's kind of a manipulative relationship or anything like that, it's really important to talk to that person first.
Well, that's, I know it can be very hard when you want to talk to someone or, and you know a woman or man is going through being a victim. For example, you know, you may be working with someone and they don't ever say anything bad about their boyfriend or husband, and they, you know, they may never will, because honestly, that's probably the only thing they've ever known, and they don't know how to deal with it, because first they think they're going to get into trouble. But, you know, we want to educate the women, you know, it's okay to let us know what's really going on. They're not going to get into trouble for it. We're here to help. And so we can stop that abuse or, you know, any kind of unhealthy relationship that they may carry on if they decide to want to be in another relationship, because it is hard. They like River says, they have feelings for this person, even though they may treat them in, you know, really bad, or they might not look at it that way. So looking at the victim's side of you, it's really sad for me, because, you know, all you can do is try to help, and sometimes your arm can only go so far. And hopefully, you know, people who are listening, or women, men who are going through that, can understand that, you know, it's okay to ask for help. So
yeah, our hand can only go so far, but it's up to them to reach for it.
Yes,
too.
Yes, exactly.
And I wanted to add in there as well, like, even though that our programs are made mainly for women, it doesn't mean that we may have resources or directions for males who are going through an abusive relationship.
Yeah.
And, like, I just want to throw that out there, especially, you know, in one of our recent school presentations, one of the educators was threw that out to the students, that just because that it's, you know, we're from Tundra Women's Coalition does not mean that we have resources or directions for any males that are going through any type of any unhealthy or abusive relationships.
It doesn't mean we don't have resources for males who are going through an unhealthy relationship.
Right.
Yeah, and actually, just I want to talk a little bit about this. So a lot of times you know, we talk about domestic violence and we say she or he, it's not necessarily that we think only women go through domestic violence. It's just that statistics indicate that women are far more likely to be victims of domestic violence and men perpetrators, simply because socially, like, men have more power. It doesn't mean men are bad, and a lot of times the people who perpetrate might perpetrate multiple people. We know that the majority of men are good, but we know that the majority of perpetrators are men. So that's kind of what we use this for. And I just wanted to add here that a lot of the abuse we see towards men is oftentimes unnoticed, because it's a lot more, it's less physical a lot of times and more manipulation. It could even be things like sexual coercion or things like that. So really, again, looking at the dynamics of a relationship and who has the majority of the power. And if, you know, sometimes in a relationship, someone else does have the majority of the power and another person's very happy with that. I've seen it. But a lot of times having that power is indicating that, you know, they might be being abused in some way or another. And again, like River said earlier, it could be financial, it could be verbal, it could be emotional, it could be physical, it could be sexual. So even though we see kind of different types of domestic violence are more prominent in the different genders, it's really important that we do address the fact that men, in a lot of ways, are being abused. And a lot of that control is through manipulation, the more that I see.
This may be kind of, you know, because some people might not know. What does manipulate mean, Anime? Some people may not understand that, you know, the audience that, you know, we want to get. Because, you know, sometimes I, like, even before, I'm like, what does that really mean?
Okay. I think the simplest way that I can put it is that you're using a situation or a certain emotion that someone has at that time to get your desired outcome, and that's it. So it's not finding a compromise. It's using whatever means you can, emotional or situational, to get your desired outcome. So I'll give an example of one that one brought in one of the groups, is that we're seeing a lot more people, I'm going to say specifically, a lot more women are doing things like getting pregnant to keep their partner in a relationship. And that is really harmful to a person because they might not have had as much of a choice in it, or have gotten a lot of communication throughout that process. And, you know, that's, you know, emotionally damaging to someone. And that's really kind of a show of manipulation, using a situation and getting your desired outcome, and that's it. So if someone's trying to leave a relationship and happens, like their partner happens to get pregnant and they choose not to stay, it's about having them to be able to see the child. It's a lot of compromise. But in a manipulative relationship, there is no compromise.
Thank you.
So that's just kind of one of the examples. All right. And this one's kind of just leading right into it, actually. So what does power and control have to do with domestic violence, and what might it look like? Ooh, let me say that again. I don't think my... So what does power and control have to do with domestic violence, and what might it look like?
That one is... it's even hard for me to answer sometimes. Because, you know, we think of power and control as maybe the same things or maybe different, especially with domestic violence. This keeps running through my mind is workplace. You know, a lot of times men or women may not talk about, you know, what really, you know, happens in a work setting. And, you know, like someone in a position has that power and control, they may use it for someone who is, you know, trying to get by and trying to make it. And, you know, they see that and they like that power and control. And that's a form maybe of domestic violence in a way. I don't know if I'm putting it correctly, but that's one thing that's kind of going through my mind as I think of power and control. We want people to, you know, we see that more now social media wise and maybe through other people, that is happening more in the workforce. And hopefully people who are experiencing that may, you know, start speaking up more about it. You never know.
Samantha, that's a really good point about kind of in the workplace and how that can show what power and control looks like. And to have a healthy relationship, it needs to be equal. It needs to be loving and caring, and it needs to be equal. But when you're in a position of power, it can't be equal. So like, for example, if someone's your boss, they have like some kind of power over you, and there's just a certain kind of block, like a certain wall, like things you can't say to your boss, things you can't say to someone who has power and control over you. And that's why those kinds of relationships are like frowned upon. I mean, not only in the workplace with your boss, or not only in school with your teacher, where someone has power and control over another, but also in a relationship. Someone can have power and control, which they assert, and it's unhealthy. And being able to recognize when that is happening can be empowering, and just noticing those things.
Especially if they target a younger audience, you know, someone that is of age and they don't know how to have a relationship at first. And, you know, so they go through their young adult life in a relationship of power and control, and they don't know how to break that. And, you know, we just want them to know that, you know, it does stop.
I just want to add a little bit. I just kind of want to define power a little bit. Power is basically, it could be an advantage you have, it could be your ability to act, and it could be ability to choose how kind of things are going. And power itself is not bad to have. You know, I feel as an advocate and as a person, I have a lot of power because I have a lot of say in kind of what I do, and kind of who I can be around, and also what I can do for my community. I feel I have a lot of power in that sense because I feel like my voice matters. But if you have an abusive relationship, it's someone who's using certain things to their advantage. It could be physical power. It could be social standing in your community. It could be financial power because you make the money. And it's how you use it to kind of break down another person or to hurt another person. And this feeling of power or needing power in a relationship can come from feeling powerless in some other aspect of your life. And I don't say that to give, you know, someone who perpetrates violence or domestic violence an excuse. And it doesn't make the domestic violence less dangerous. But power itself can be kind of an addictive feeling. And if someone is in a domestically violent situation, then oftentimes they feel put down, maybe not like they have as much worth or things like that. And that's really a lot because of that power dynamic. Like, you can't do anything because you could never do anything right, or things like that. Like, those type of messages have been kind of given them to them a lot. And that's really one of the big things we see with working with women, is that, you know, they're told all the time they can't do this. They can't live without them. They can't have a good relationship without them because, you know, they take care of them or something like that, and to the point where people believe it. Okay, and so for the last question is, how do you help someone who's experiencing domestic violence but does not want to leave the relationship?
support them. Support them anyway. That's their choice. I mean, at that point, the best thing that you can do is just not further isolate them. Like, say my friend is in an abusive relationship, and I know her boyfriend is being abusive towards her. I can't stop hanging out with her because I don't like him. I can't stop saying I love her and can't stop saying I support her. It's really about choice and about just being there for someone.
Yeah. Being a friend isn't necessarily supporting someone's relationship. It's supporting that person themselves.
Yes.
Because, you know, you don't want them to not seek help when they really do need it. You know, if you show that kind of, you know, abstain or negativity of their relationship, they're going to be like, oh my gosh, maybe I'm not going to just say anything about it. So doing that, you know, showing that support is really good. And I think that's a good point, River.
I think one thing that we can do is really say, like, okay, maybe say someone comes to me and then they tell me about this and they don't want to leave their relationship but they don't know what to do, is really maybe just help them identify safe places for them to be if anything goes down. For instance, have a go bag.
Safety plan.
Yeah, so safety planning. So with, like, important documents, maybe some money, maybe some clothes or anything they need to get out of that situation really fast. And maybe say, well, this is a safe space, or if you're comfortable with it, and say if it was, like, my sister or something, I could say, well, my house is a safe place.
Yeah, friends, professional, you know, work, shelter. I mean, find those safe places so they, you know, if you do make a phone call, they know what you're trying to do.
And also, along with having developing a good safety plan, you should also acknowledge that it can constantly change at any given moment. Mm-hmm. Like maybe your sister decided to move to a new location. I think it'd be important for, you know, your friend to know, hey, you know, my sister's moving. So the new safety place is here, or.
Mm. Yeah, so it changes a lot. That was kind of our last question. We're going to go kind of back to announcements again. So start with the announcements again. So the thrift store is open Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Fridays, and Saturdays from 1 to 3. So the TWC thrift store is located right next to TWC, and it's a volunteer-run store. So you should always call before going over, because we can't guarantee that a volunteer will be there. So donations are accepted, but we like them at the thrift store, preferably not outside.
They have a drop box right next to the thrift store.
Okay, so at the drop box, and not outside, because we can't guarantee that they won't get ruined in the weather.
Yeah, or taken.
So at the drop box by the thrift store. So we have open positions at TWC. If you're interested, go to www.tundrapeace.org. And October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. So TWC's Domestic Violence Awareness Month's events have ended, but we are still doing our Purple Gusbuck campaign. And that's where people have purple gusbucks, and they kind of reach their hands out to the edges of the picture. So when we put them all together, it looks like you're holding hands. And if you would like to submit a picture of yourself wearing a purple gusbuck, it could be emailed to twc@twcpeace.org. So yeah, if you guys want to participate, please send them in there. I guess this is thank you for listening to our Peace Talk radio show, and I hope you guys have a nice day.
Thanks for listening to Wellness Wednesdays on KYUK, a show about the health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m.